trigger warning for suicide this episode.
Yes, so if that is something that you don't want to deal with, you might want to skip this episode.
Yes.
Warning, the following podcast contains spoilers and swears.
Good morning.
Don't turn it off.
Good morning. Who are you? No, it's terrible.
Hi, my name is Evelyn Rogers. Who are you?
I'm your father, Scott Rogers.
Yeah.
Will you play with me?
Sure, but video games, not a board game.
Ugh, forget it.
But what is this?
What is this? You're the one who's supposed to ask
this. I know. What is this? What are we?
You've forgotten. We've gone so long between episodes, you've forgotten our format.
What are we?
No, not what are we. This isn't a philosophical podcast.
Well, you know what we are.
It's the opposite. It's a magicians-based podcast.
We are a podcast about the magicians and magicians-related things.
Called Fillory and Father. Hooray, we did it. We're back.
Short break.
Yeah, not short enough.
Not short enough.
Yes. We're back from our break.
And we're back with a new season. It's season 4 time.
Yay. We're reaching the best season.
Ending
season.
In my mind, we're reaching the end of the show.
The best ending season.
I'm literally going to shank you.
There's no shanking allowed.
I will shank you.
It's a shank-free podcast.
That's not true. Like Loki says, love is a dagger, and I'll use it to stab you.
And
lovingly.
Loki also said it was a bad metaphor.
And he also is doing crazy things on that TV show.
All right, but that's not a Loki podcast. All right, let's talk about it.
Today,
what is this episode?
We're talking about season 4, episode 1, A Flock of Lost Birds.
Directed by Chris Fisher.
Shout
again.
Shout out to Chris.
All right, first we start with...
Well, it's a whole new cast, technically.
Technically. We don't see enough of the whole new cast.
I know, that's
though.
True. I really wish it was kind of more.
I kind of wish they had a whole episode of just them. Yeah.
I think that would be really interesting.
I mean, not that I don't want to see our good friends get work, but yes. How cool would it be if it was just like an entire episode of the alternate actors?
That in another universe, it was that, and it was good.
Well, maybe they thought about doing that, and then they were like, no, we got to pay these guys that we have under contract.
But if you remember from the end of season 3, Alice had gotten a potion from Dean Fogg to erase her memory and create a whole new persona for herself because she wanted to commit, like, identity death. And
identity suicide. Again with the suicide.
Trigger warning.
Yeah,
today for mentions of suicide, probably discussions of suicide and depression and stuff like that. In fact, a suicide warning at the end of this episode.
Yeah, good place to put
good
it,
good job
right?
Putting it at the end.
How about a warning at the beginning
instead? Jesus Christ. But Alice tried to commit identity death, but instead she got locked away in the library, and Dean Fogg used the identity potion on everyone else in the questing gang. And so everyone has new identities. So the very first person we see is not Julia, not Quentin, not Elliot. We see Kimber D'Antoni coming home from work, and she's walking along, and she gets a little note that says, "Congratulations! You've been accepted," and it flies away.
To where?
Very similarly
to the
pilot of the show,
yes.
In the opening of the book, it flies away. She chases after that piece of paper, and she stumbles out onto the Brakeville's campus, but from a different area that Quentin came out of.
Right, and then
she meets
the most important character in the book,
lounging on the
Todd, who's doing
sign.
His best Elliot impersonation,
and it's going horribly.
Well, no.
He takes a little. A little hit of a cigarette, and then immediately just starts coughing everywhere.
Because he's Todd.
Because it's Todd, yes.
Exactly.
And he takes Kim along, and he says, "Hey, you know, always be polite to librarians. They've got the good stuff, you know," which is, of course,
heroin.
The magic.
Oh, you mean magic?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Magic.
I thought the librarians were dealing in drugs.
No, it's just, well, actually, technically, yeah, because they do poison people. But Kim is being tested along with a bunch of other kids, and they've got a much smaller class size than the original testing section. Oh, it looks like the
same size.
It's not the same set. It's a different set.
Oh, right.
Dad. It's the lab set. And so
well, they should have put them. Wait.
They're testing all the kids in batches because.
Hang on. If they wanted to make it look like there weren't enough people, they should have put it in the same room, but had less people in it.
But I don't think maybe they could have gotten that location.
Oh, why not?
I don't know.
Where was that location?
I don't know. I think it was like a different place than the actual, so you know, because they had all set. They had their built sets already done. Right. And that saves money than the actual location. Well,
but yes, but sometimes if you want to make a point in your story, you should do it. You should show it, not tell it.
Yeah, well, we know how good they are at that. but there's a much smaller class size, and similarly,
there was a funny
Julia in the original pilot. Kim like raises her hand to ask a question.
It was funny where Dean Fogg goes, "Anybody have a question?" And then Kimber raises her hand, and then Dean Fogg says, "I'll answer all of your questions later." I'll question everybody's questions later, but it was like only Kimber raised their hand. So it was like Dean Fogg was kind of like, well, I'll just get to all of you.
Eventually.
Yeah, there was no direct addressing of Kimber as a person.
Yeah, but then we see Professor Lipson and Dean Fogg, they're kind of, you know, they're checking out people as they're testing and seeing who's succeeding, who's not. And Kim turns out to be a dud. She's getting X's on literally every single portion of the written test, and apparently she had shorted out the globe when they found her, and so Dean Fogg takes out his little looking glass, and he looks at her, and it breaks, and Lipson's like, okay, that's fucking weird, are you okay? And Dean Fogg's like, nah, I'm okay, yeah, I just have a splitting headache now, I have a migraine, and, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, he means Kim, and so Lipson's like, okay, do we want to keep or get rid of the migraine? And Fogg's like, actually, I want to keep him to see what happens. And we look through the little looking glass at Kim, and who is it but Julia Wicker?
Yeah, you know, that was kind of a bad shot, though, because it was hard to see that it was Julia. It was hard to see.
They should have made the crack a little bit more kind of to the side.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you knew who it was, but as they were showing it to me, and I've watched this show for 3 seasons.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, who is that?
I had to tell you.
Yeah, you had to tell me who it was. So, anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So, onward. We get the credits. Cheerio
planets.
No, we get the opening credits.
We do. We get to see a boring old street.
No, it's a nice, pretty, everything's happy. It's a nice
little street, but everything's been painted over. And there's no fancy, like, hand. No, or there's, fun. No there's no. There's fun no.
It's
mural.
Not creepy looking anymore.
There's no fun mural.
It's nice now.
Just painted over and sad. Looking.
That's because this whole season is the nice season.
No.
Right? This is the happy season where everything is happy and nice and ends up happily ever after.
No.
Right?
No.
Yes, it is. All right. No. Well, we'll just have to find out.
Yeah. But then we see the Cheerios planet. Ugh. Yay. Everyone
I don't like the design of the Cheerios planet because it makes no sense.
It's a planet. No, it's a donut.
But it doesn't make sense, and there's nothing ever reflected in anything we see in the world itself that indicates anything about it being the Cheerio planet. First of all, it would have very different cloud system than if it were a round planet. And secondly, we always only see the interior of the library.
Well, only see the Netherlands, but we don't ever see anything in the sky.
Exactly. And so it's like, why go through all that effort to say...
Well, it's probably like they're on the outer part of the Cheerio.
Well, first of all, if you look at the Cheerio, it looks like there's land masses that wrap around everywhere, right? So that's... And secondly, why is there a whole bowl full of Cheerios? Why wouldn't it just be one Cheerio planet?
Because maybe there's just, like, one fucking huge-ass branch of the library. No,
that's what happened, is they just cut and paste the graphic and said, oh, it looks better as a whole cereal bowl.
Instead of one.
It doesn't... It just
one
seems...
donut, it's a whole bag of Cheerios.
I mean, I get it. Like, they show the Cheerio, and you're like, all right, it's another planet. Although, you know...
We've seen it multiple times.
I know, but one. I don't like the representation of... It's supposed to be another dimension, right?
Yeah.
So why isn't it just Earth?
Because it's another dimension.
But... No, that doesn't... I mean, okay, granted, given the whole sphere of possibilities, you know. But first of all, if it was meant to be Earth in another dimension anyway, why would it be, why would there be multiple planets within the same, you know, solar, not even solar system, right? Like within orbit of each other.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, dude.
It just, it's unnecessarily unexplained, and it's the opposite of the kind of mystery that Lev creates.
Yeah.
It's mystery for the point of making, you know, a visual, but there's no reason for it other than the quick, well, this is just the library. Like, it would have been better, it almost would have been better if they never show that shot, because it's really easy to tell when you're in the library, right? Everything is monochromatic, and and there's only particular characters that live in that space, like Zelda. So I don't need the Cheerio Planet at all. It's not adding anything at all to the narrative.
No. It's there, though.
It's sure is there. Yeah. It's I don't know. If you like the Cheerio Planet, send us an email.
Would you eat the Cheerio Planets
in a bowl? Is it Honey Nut Cheerio?
Maybe that's where the, that's what the is old gods are doing. Berry Cheerios? They're slowly eating all the Cheerio Planets.
No.
But we see Alice. She's in jail. And she's, you know, chatting with her little cellmate right before we see a librarian mentioning that they're having a cockroach infestation in the library, and that she's going to make a sign about it and how people should not eat food in the library. And she's like, should I use Helvetica or Times New Roman, or should I use Comic Sans?
Oh,
and
I thought, was
like, that's so relatable. I love typography.
I thought she was going to put a sign in the library to tell the cockroaches to stay out.
No.
No cockroaches, please. Is there? Do you think there's sentient other animals in in Fillory, at least? I don't know about the Cheerio Planet, but do you think that there's
cockroaches?
Do you think the cockroaches are sentient?
Well, cockroaches are sentient.
Well, all right. Do you think the cockroaches are sentient to a level where they'd be able to understand a sign that says "Please stay out of the library"?
No.
No, you don't think so?
I don't think so. I don't think cockroaches can read.
I mean, if there's talking rabbits, there could be talking cockroaches. Cockroaches can read. What about Jiminy Cricket?
Yeah, he's not a cockroach.
Well, he's kind of. He's a cricket.
He's a cricket. That's different from a cockroach.
Were you saying that cockroaches are uneducated where crickets are?
No.
Is there a Jiminy cricket school?
Jiminy Cricket was clearly also stupid.
What do you mean he was stupid?
Because he was counseling a little wooden boy.
He was giving good advice. He gave good advice.
They got stuck in a whale.
It was Pinocchio's fault. It was not Jiminy Cricket. Jiminy Cricket was the smart one. Of course, in the original story, Pinocchio throws a shoe at him and squishes him.
Yeah.
Which is pretty grim.
Yeah.
That means that Pinocchio is a little bastard.
Grimm's Fairy Tales.
Oh, but I'm ding.
But Alice has been chatting with her cellmate, who we don't get to see. He's just in the room, just
he's
over.
Mysterious.
He's mysterious. And then we see Zelda. She comes in and she's like, hey, you've got to eat. So here you go. And it's literally just a plate of fucking bacon.
Yeah. Jeez.
And Alice is like, oh my god, you nosy bitch. You read my book. Was it steamy for you? Was it hot for you? Feel bad about yourself.
See, Zelda would have, I would have, if Alice had asked that question and said, was it steamy for you?
I'd be like, yes.
Zelda would be it like, yeah, so actually, great. It was pretty good.
It was
good
some
job.
Good literature. Great job.
Congratulations on having some good sex and some bacon.
I mean, it's like the most intense form of, like,
breaching
of privacy, because it's literally like you're reading about their whole intimate life.
All right, here's an interesting question. Yes. In these books about the people's lives, is there an inner monologue about their thoughts, or is it only a description of the events in their life?
It seems to be a description of just the events, because later on in this season, we have a part where Alice is like, oh, Quentin, I read your book, you're gonna die in 3 days, and it says that you get distracted by a dog, and then you forget to you don't splash the blood on the monster, and then he kills you because the monster's mad at you. And so presumably it doesn't really say like what you're thinking about. It just is just doing like the blatant actions. So you don't, you just get like the kind of surface level life experience.
Right.
Because if it had like a lot of thought, if it had like thoughts included in, I think it would be, all those books would be much thicker.
Yeah, exactly. There'd be maybe 3 or 4 volumes of Eliot.
Yeah, instead of just 2.
Yep.
Zelda's like, I'm not gonna let you starve yourself. Eat the fucking food. And so Alice does. She eats the bacon very angrily, and Zelda gives her some approved reading material, which is Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis, which is ironic considering there's cockroaches everywhere.
Is it ironic, or is it meant to be something
it's
to help?
It's obviously on purpose. It's not supposed to help her, but it's like an on-purpose little wink-wink nod-nod to the audience. But
wait a second, though. It doesn't come back in a play.
Not Metamorphosis, but the idea of using a cockroach does. Mm. And Alice is like, one more thing, and Zelda says, you know, Dean Fogg's not coming. He's not going to come back for you. And then we cut to Dean Fogg and Zelda.
Yeah, that's
and
just
he's,
mean.
Yeah, and Dean Fogg has brought all of the list of the new students, because the library mandated that they look over every new magician. Because, of course, and...
Well, wait, that doesn't make sense.
It's because they're, like, a fascist order that wants to keep everyone in line. That's why.
But
if you know who the new magicians are, you can decide to veto the ones that you don't want.
Yes, but for the majority of this show, it doesn't really seem like any other magicians matter other than those
eight.
Yeah, it's not like a new one kind of bubbles up and...
Well, what about Marina?
No, but Marina's
and
old.
And we'll see Stopper this season.
I don't know who that is.
He's in the books, Dad. Remember?
No, who is he in the books?
He's the little boy, also named Stoppard, who's part of the heist team. And he's really good with clocks and time magic.
Oh, okay.
Remember? He offers to try and fix Quentin's stopwatch and it doesn't work.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah. But he's like the only other one I can think of that's like mildly important, aside from like Plum, but then they kind of shaft Plum.
All right. Well,
so it doesn't.
We'll save your ire
matter.
For those episodes. All right, so moving forward.
But, Zelda's like, hey, no, Alice is still asking for you, and she's fixated on this, like, scary monster, but I've told her that we have, like, a team that's gonna go try and get it, and Dean Fogg's like, she's not concerned about the state of all, like, the world, she's concerned about her friends. And he's like, you know, I object with, like, what you're doing, you know, the order is an oversight committee, and it's fucking sucks, and Zelda's like, no, we're, like, keeping everybody safe, haha. Order's great. Everyone loves the library.
No one's
afraid of the library.
Everyone loves a fascist.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so, moving forward.
We see, kind of, like, this match cut while Dean Fogg is talking about how, you know, he says, like, all the questers actually saved magic. Everyone thinks that the McAllisters and the library did it, but it was actually his students. And
sure.
Now they're in danger because they don't know
right.
who they are. And we see a match cut of all of the different identities that the questers now currently have. So we see Penny 23. He's now DJ Hansel.
Okay, wait, let me ask you a question.
What?
Do you think DJ Hansel is a Zoolander reference?
I don't know.
Did you not see Zoolander?
I've never seen Zoolander.
I finally saw Zoolander. It's a terrible film.
Uh-huh.
And
you're hurting every Zoolander fan.
I know. I don't know how much crossover is there between
Zoolander
and the Magicians. But Hansel is the supermodel that Owen Wilson plays
in the movie.
And he's kind of similar personality.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know. I'm guessing it's a Zoolander crossover. Yeah. How much better, though, would it have been if Owen Wilson were playing... Like, what if, like... All right, here's a crazy idea. What if, like, every alternate identity of the cast for...
Was not just
Owen Wilson.
Although
that's pretty funny, too. No, what I was going to say is if it was an actor that was, like, way more famous than the people. Like, so if it was, like, Owen... So let's do a little celebrity casting.
Robert De Niro.
Well, yeah. No, Robert Downey Jr. would be Quentin, right?
No.
Yeah, kind of.
Absolutely not.
He looks like kind of like him from if you look at
no.
Yeah, when it's like the actor. Yeah.
Not at all. Oh, you mean the other actor?
Yeah, the other actor.
The actor that plays
looks
Brian.
Looks kind of like looks like Robert Downey Jr.
A little bit. No.
And it could be Jonah Hill for Josh.
The only actor that looks like
Hang
the
on,
most
stop.
Different.
Don't
no,
not
what
play
I'm saying
my game.
Is the only actor that looks the most
play with
different
me.
From their actual
play
character
with me.
Is the one who plays Sam Cunningham. Because she's like a redhead and, you know, Katie's...
So that could be like Mare Winningham or
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep, right? Yeah, why not? Hit Shoot for the Moon.
Oh, and
Who would play Margot, aka Janet?
I don't know. Let's think. Hmm.
How about, who's the one who plays Spider-Man's mom now?
I don't remember.
The what's her name? Who won the Academy Award? That actress.
Yeah.
And then, so DJ Hansel's Owen Wilson and Josh's character. What's Josh's character's name?
Isaac.
Isaac would be Jonah Hill. Uh-huh. And then
That'd be the same.
Yeah, well, they're similar. I mean, the body types are pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
And then who would be Julia? Who would we recast as Kimber? Although I like the actress for Kimber.
I like the actress.
All right, we'll keep her. You can keep your job. And who would be the alternate Elliot? I didn't see
We never see. We never see Nigel, the son, the bastard son of a British lord.
All right.
And I'm so mad about that.
That's the
best fucking backstory out of all of them.
Yeah.
And we never get to see
All him. Right. So you know who Nigel would be played by?
Who?
He'd be played by Harry, the Duke of Windsor.
Oh.
Actually cast British royalty as what? What do you mean gross?
Gross.
Well, only for one shot.
Gross. No. But we see all the different identities of them. We see DJ Hansel, which is Penny 22. We see Isaac, who is Josh. He's an Uber driver. We see Janet Pluchinski, who is Margot. She's a fashion editor. We see Sam Cunningham, who is she's a narcotics officer, ACAB guys. And, you know, we see her get arrested. And then she's like, haha, fist bump. It was actually undercover. Woo.
Yep.
Ugh.
What do you mean, yuck? Undercover cops, they got a job to do.
They suck.
They don't suck.
Yes, they do.
Sometimes they help.
But no, they don't.
Don't be so anti.
But then
police.
We kind of, for the most of this episode, we kind of follow Sam Cunningham, this like police officer, as she's kind of unraveling the mystery of her identity.
Something is up.
So we see her. They've just caught like a bunch of dudes, and she's talking to like her officer, and he's like, oh yeah, that guy. There's a guy on the screen, and he's just like the guy that always gets away. You know, he's been caught. He's been like arrested 6 times, but he always gets out. And so Sam's like, I gotta illegally try and arrest this man. Like, I just have to. The urge is so strong, you know, to just try and illegally arrest this man.
She doesn't say I gotta illegally arrest.
She doesn't say it, but she does track him down and chase him to a Hedgewitch safe house under literally no reason whatsoever. She just follows him and chases him and is like, I'm a cop, I'm gonna try and arrest you.
Because he was texting her a la Sherlock.
He wasn't texting her. And she literally just goes after him for like no reason other than the fact that he's been arrested before and hasn't gone to jail.
Obviously he's up to no good.
Ugh, it's so shitty. But she chases him to a hedge safe house and she finds nothing but a mirror portal. She doesn't know it's a mirror portal, but we can figure that out because we've read the books and we're smart.
Did they ever use a mirror portal
show? In this episode.
No,
show. Yes, last season. Remember when the mirror portal broke? Yes.
Right.
But she sees that the guy at the counter in the place that she busted into has a mysterious little star tattoo on his wrist. And there was a star.
Mysteriously obvious
star tattoo. And there was one outside on the door.
Right.
And so Sam starts doing research.
She goes on to Google search.
She goes on to Google and she looks up star tattoo. She looks up star graffiti wall or whatever.
Laziest detective ever.
Yeah. And
that's like the amount of research that she did on this case is about the amount of research that my students do in class.
Oh.
Which is the only thing.
Sorry to any of dad's students.
The only difference between her research and their research is they also liberally use Wikipedia.
Well, Wikipedia actually is a good source. You just have to go into the source stuff on the actual page.
Right, exactly. You got to go one layer at least down.
Wikipedia is actually reliable.
It's a good starting point, but it's not where you need to end up.
Yeah. But she researches and she finds a website, an article about hedge witches hiding in plain sight, and talks about, you know, graffiti. And as she's looking at the article, her computer shorts off, and then she tries to write a note down about the hedge witches and about the star tattoos, and she spills coffee on it, and she's like, oh, fuck, what am I gonna do now? Like, girl, it's just coffee. Like, you can still read the note.
But what it shows is that some forces in the universe is
preventing her from researching, and then the lights start flickering, you know, this whole thing.
I don't know, that seems kind of like a half-assed thing, right? Yeah. Like,
defog,
like
you, make your spell work better.
Well, I mean, like, if you just want to avoid somebody from doing this, then why don't you just strike them blind and leave it at that, right?
Jeez Louise.
Right? I mean, what's going to stop her from doing more research anyway, or looking at things, or, you know, finding other ways to write stuff down? It seems like a kind of ineffectual... It's just an excuse for the team to blow stuff up,
which is fine. We love practical effects.
Yeah, totally support, but... Still, it's just, I don't know. It's not a very effective spell.
But Sam goes into the case files, and she finds some pictures of that more star graffiti, and she finds one of the local places. So she goes to check it out, and while she's investigating, we see this kind of wonderful little... Because this whole time, you know, we see Jade Taylor, who plays Katie, playing Sam, and we also see the actress who plays Sam. And so we kind of get this wonderful cutaway where it's Katie, and she's gonna go in, and then we actually see Sam outside of the building, you know, scouting the place out. And we see the hedge witch, and he's watching her, and he's like texting his friend. He's like, "She's still here. Is she a cop or what?" And he's like, "I'm gonna go check what the hell is up with this." And so he does a reveal spell, and he gets fucking blasted backwards because
the strength of
the witness perception spell on Katie is so strong that it'll prevent anyone from even looking at her to find out what she really is.
That made more sense. Like, that thing where it's like, you can't look at who this person really is, I thought was cool. But the other stuff, like, you can't find out information about your life, is like, that's hokey.
Yeah. And then she comes across the guy. She, like, chases him and finds him at his car. And he's like, "Hey, you know, I don't know what the fuck is up with you, but, like, stay away from me. I don't want to get into whatever witness protection spell that you're dealing with." And she's like, "What are you dealing?" And crystal meth. And he's like, "No, just some like spells and stuff. Jesus Christ." And she rips off his clothing and takes his stuff for literally no reason. She takes his protection amulet that's keeping him safe from her spell. And he's like, "That was protecting me from you." And then he starts running away, and she's like, "Hey, wait." And she's like, pulls out her like fucking gun to chase after him and stuff. And it's like, girl, what is the reason? You have no reason to arrest him. Literally none. Well, it's just a hunch. She's literally just breaking the law.
She's a cop.
She's just breaking the law. Yeah.
Cops gotta arrest.
No, they really don't have to.
That's entirely what they're there to do.
She's literally just breaking the law. So she chases him, and he runs into the street and gets hit by a fucking car.
Yes, he gets a what was that famous movie where Brad Pitt gets hit by a truck?
No, it's like Mean Girls.
Well, all that. Like, ever since Regina that... George. No, there was this Regina movie...
Regina George gets hit by a bus.
So there was this movie that, like, when in 2000, or maybe it was 1999, when the Phantom Menace trailer came out, everybody went to go see the trailer, and they would run it, like, a couple of times before whatever the movie was, and then almost everybody would bail. And I stayed because I'm like, I don't want to just pay for a movie and then just watch a trailer. That's stupid. And so the movie that it was running in front of was a movie called Meet Joe Black, which obviously they didn't have a lot of confidence in because they thought that only people that would go and see the Phantom Menace trailer like would go see it. That was like a way to artificially drum up attendance. And so I stayed in it and watched it. It was pretty good. It was a movie where Brad Pitt is essentially Death. It's a remake of Death Takes a Holiday. But in it, there's a famous part where Brad Pitt is standing there and he's like in love and he goes to say goodbye to look back on his girlfriend or whatever, wannabe girlfriend, and he gets plowed over by a car. It's a pretty great scene, pretty funny, pretty shocking at the time. Is like maybe the best moment in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you go online and look up Brad Pitt gets hit by a car, you can see it.
No, you'll actually
anyway,
see a video of Brad Pitt
ever since Brad Pitt got hit by that car, everybody else did that same gag, like that shock, get hit by a car gag. I'm sure that somebody has a montage somewhere on YouTube of people getting plastered in movies by a truck or a car or something like that. But there you go. That's where it first came from. Now the first person to ever get hit by a car in a movie.
The first person to ever get hit by a car.
Was Brad Pitt.
That was actually...
No, the first person to get hit by a car in real Z was that was a little girl.
Great Gatsby.
Did you know that? There's a statue. I don't know where it is. Probably back east somewhere. That there's a statue dedicated to the first person who got killed by a car.
Oh.
And that was this little girl who got ran over by a car. It's pretty horrible.
Ugh.
So you can look that one up too. There's a statue for that little girl.
Speaking of getting hit by cars, we see Janet Pluchinski and she's taking a little nap on her desk. And we hear the ambient voice of Ember calling to her, who's been dead for a
season. Yeah, I was going to say, isn't Ember dead?
He is dead.
So why is Ember coming back?
They just wanted the actor back. And we see Janet.
They wanted to put him in his hairy pants.
Yes. She wakes up in White Spire, but it's clearly a dream. And we see Ember. He's like lounging on a little lounge chair.
I didn't think that was White Spire. I thought it was Ember's tomb.
It's White Spire.
Are you sure?
Yes, it's White Spire.
I wasn't 100% sure about
that. Dude, it's White Spire.
It doesn't look like White Spire.
Yes, it is. It does look like White Spire because it's just the set in different lighting.
It's just in red lighting.
But he's like lounging with some kittens and just petting them, which must have been a fun day for him, honestly.
Yes, herding kittens.
Not herding kittens. He's just petting them.
No, herding. H-E-R-D. Oh. It wasn't herding the kittens.
It sounded like you said herding.
No, he was not hurting the kittens.
But, Janet, well, how she gets to White Spire, she wakes up and hears the voice and goes through her door, and it's the door to White Spire.
Well, wait,
it echoes, again, it echoes the pilot where Quentin is in the library and he falls asleep, and then he wakes up and goes to the door in the library and opens it up, and he ends up in Fillory.
Well, that's because in Fillory, there's no consistent way to get there.
I know, it's also an echo back to the pilot episode, just like they did in the beginning with Kim. But it turns out this Ember is actually an emanation activated to contact the High King.
Plot device.
When great ill is afoot, and great ill meaning world war, pandemic, a hostile god is on the surface of the planet, a peasant uprising or a mass rising
peasant
of the dead.
Uprising.
Or a mass rising of the dead. And so he says, fix this. And Janet's like, what do you mean fix this? I'm not a High King. You know, what the hell are you talking about? But obviously we know that it's Margot, mm-hmm. who actually is the High King.
And who actually is Janet.
Who is also technically Janet. But Ember just says, fix this now. And Janet wakes up.
On the dirt in white pants, which had to have messed up her
No,
white pants.
You're thinking of way later.
Oh, okay.
She wakes up in her office.
All right.
So then we see Sam again, and she puts on the amulet that Hedgewitch has, and then she starts doing research because she's like, you know what, whatever, I'll try and look it up. So she looks up herself, and she finds a flock of birds, which is a poorly written graphic novel.
Poorly written.
That has everything about her life. And then we see Janet again. Her eye has been acting up, which is actually Margot's fairy eye.
Right.
And so she has to get an eye patch because she's been seeing weird colors. And all the Fillory and Further books are sold out, so she can't really do any research about it.
That's because everybody has been listening to our podcast.
Everyone's been listening to podcasts and like, wow, it's so
bought
good.
Every copy of The Magicians.
Exactly.
And now Lev
exactly.
Grossman has a yacht. And
he has a yacht, but it's really small, and it's in the bathtub in his little apartment in Brooklyn.
And it's called the Mudjack.
It's called the Mudjack, and it's just a tiny little rubber ducky.
Do you think Lev has a yacht?
No.
Why not?
No.
He lives in New York. It's an island.
What?
New York's an island. New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So people have boats.
Yeah.
And they go yachting.
I don't think he can afford a boat. Sorry,
no?
Love.
He,
I don't think
he can afford rent in New York.
That's true.
That's
that is true. Janet is like walking along with her new eye patch. She looks fashionable. She hates it. And she gets grabbed by Sam. And Sam flashes her little badge, which apparently justifies her kidnapping Janet.
Right? You get a badge, boom. You automatically
break the law break the law.
Relax.
She's like, hey.
Ever since you shaved your head, you're now an anarchist.
She's like, hey, you know, you're part of this graphic novel. I know this sounds crazy, but I'm wearing this amulet that'll protect you. But if we actually talk about your real identity, then stuff will start crashing because this spell is self-protective. And while they start talking about their true identities, a mirror cracks and breaks, and then a bunch of lights start shorting out and breaking. It's very scary. And it's because Sam talks about how the graphic novel has literally every single aspect of Janet's life.
So who drew the graphic novel?
I don't know. Someone did. They hired someone.
No, not who really drew the graphic novel. I mean, like, why is there a graphic novel drawn of somebody's life, of their life?
Because, well, they say it in the second episode, in this next episode, but Dean Fogg decided to use a graphic novel because it was easier to do than an actual book because there was visuals and it seemed like an okay story. And that's why he chose
it. But, like, why represent this story if they're trying to go through all these pains to keep it secret?
I don't know. He's just like, I just thought
the story needs to be told. Is Dean Fogg a frustrated comic book writer?
I guess.
Is that what's going on?
But speaking of
comics. That's a whole subplot. There could be this whole subplot of like the adventures.
James Tiberius R. Martin.
Right. Well, yeah.
That's his pen name. Yeah,
terrible pen name. But what if there's this whole subplot? See, here's another spinoff show. Where Dean Fogg is actually a frustrated he's actually Chris Claremont, the author of the X-Men, who also went to school in upstate New York, went to Bard College. Shout out to Bard College.
Shout out to Bard. You taught my mother things.
Yes, exactly. Right. Mrs. Rogers' alma mater.
Mrs. Rogers?
My wife. Mom. Yeah, well, no. Well, she's Mrs. Rogers to these people who don't know her personally.
It's Brenda on the podcast. All right,
Brenda on the podcast. Anyway, maybe Dean Fogg is like Chris Claremont, who is also a famous upstate New York comic book writer who wrote the X-Men in the 80s and other things. And so maybe there's this whole show about him as a cartoonist slash comic book writer that is like that. What's that famous show? Not Who's the Boss. It was the one Ted Knight was the actor.
No.
Who was a comic book artist and used to draw a comic book artist, but he'd have a cow puppet on his hand to draw whenever he'd draw the cartoon because it would help him channel his character.
What the fuck?
There's this actual show where this guy was this frustrated comic book artist.
Of cow puppets, we see Alice in jail again.
Yes. What about cow puppets?
We see Alice in jail again.
Yeah.
And she's talking to her cellmate who's across the way,
right,
separated by a wall. It's just like Ten and Rose. But the cellmate says, you know, hey, it's going to be okay. We're going to get out of here. You got to stay strong, you know. And Alice says, hey, why are you in here? And he says, oh, I was obsessed with perfecting a spell. You know, Diogenes was looking for the perfect man. Well, I wanted to continue his work, but I decided to turn towards children because kids aren't as terrible as adults. And so he's trying to find a couple good kids and reward them. And he had to get a restricted book from the library, and they had to break into the poison room to get it, and he lost a lot of elf friends along the way. And then, you know, Alice tries to kind of puts it together, and she's like, oh, fuck, you're Santa Claus? Santa's in jail?
So first of all, I like that it's Santa Claus, because it harkens back to Narnia, with Santa showing up with the gift, so that's cool. And I like the alternate, their alternate version of Santa. I think that's cool, too. I don't like that Santa curses. I think that if anybody should not curse in the world, other than maybe Jesus, that should be Santa Claus. Santa is a nice guy. He's, like, always concerned with people being good and naughty.
Well, this is a different Santa, Dad.
Right. But
this
still.
This is the Santa who swears.
Well, this is the magicians. Because the magicians, they don't know how to
Santa
not
who
write.
We have Santa
who swears. Yes, they're such edgelords.
They're so edgy. Our Santa says curse words like fucking shit.
Yeah, so that's the thing, though. You don't need to. Again, this show is just appealing to its basis. It's basic level, right? It's basic. It's not.
It's basic.
It's not high
minded.
That's
a deep burn.
Exactly. Well, anyway, that's a disappointment, though, right? It takes me out of the fact that it's Santa. You're like, it's Santa, and
like,
Santa's locked up in jail. What the heck?
Like
the library is so evil, they're
like,
locking up
Santa
Claus.
It's like, oh shit, it's Santa.
Right. Well, then he was like, I don't like being fucking called Santa.
Yeah, and then he's like, yeah, I tried to kill myself.
Yeah, what, again? Yeah, what the hell? Santa trying to kill himself?
But he's like, I'm glad that I'm still here. And he says, okay, so, like, Alice, You know, again, you gotta stay. And Alice is like, haha, how'd you kill yourself? How you try to kill yourself? And he's like, oh yeah, I broke off a piece of my little tray and used that the old-fashioned way without any magic. And Alice is like, interesting, interesting, taking notes. And it's again, like, oh Jesus Christ,
this show is obsessed with suicide.
It's so bad and garbage.
And it's like, it's not like they're trying to help. Okay.
They're just like, they're just sensationalizing it and going, haha, look at it. Look at it right there. It's happening.
They're using suicide as a plot device.
But like also
with
like
with no ramifications, right?
Yeah.
Like
slap a suicide warning at the end and it's fine.
Nah, it's bullshit. So here's a question. Has anybody who committed suicide on this show stayed dead?
Yes. You know exactly who I'm thinking of.
He didn't commit suicide.
Yes, he did.
He sacrificed himself.
Yes, he did. Suicide can take the many forms. And that was one.
Well.
And he did.
Was there a suicide warning at the end of that episode?
Yes, there was.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it should be at the beginning.
It
You're
should be at the
right.
beginning. Thank you very much. But he did stay dead. So, yeah. It sucks. Also, Kira committed suicide.
Which
one
was Kira?
Season one. Julia assisted in her death.
Oh, right.
Remember?
Right. Yeah, the brain suicide.
Yeah. Right. So,
all right.
You know.
Yeah, again, how many suicides have been in this show?
So many. And Quentin also in 23 also kills himself.
Right.
He stabs himself in the heart after he gets his shade back just for a second.
Yeah.
And that's the first time that happens. And so they just keep doing it.
Yeah.
And they're like, haha, funny joke.
Well, they don't. Plot device. It's not a funny joke. They're doing it for shock.
Funny shock plot device that will do nothing.
Right. It's gross.
It's gross and bad. Feel bad about yourselves, magicians, writers.
We're sending bad vibes.
Bad vibes.
All right.
Bad vibes. But Alice says, why do you care? And Santa's like, hey, listen, your pink diary you got when you were 8 years old or whatever, that was me. I know you're a good person. You're a nice kid. You're a good kid. You're not a bad person.
Other than turning into a flamey creature destroying
whole... You've hurt people, but that doesn't mean that you should hurt. You know, you're not a bad person. And he's like, you gotta promise me that you won't do anything stupid. And Alice is like, I promise. And then it's like, commercial break. Alice slit her wrists.
Okay, so first of all, I feel that this Santa's criteria for good is very wibbly wobbly. Because this is like Darth Vader level.
Well, Alice was good when she was a kid.
Right.
But then he's like,
shouldn't you be a good person into adulthood because Santa's still watching you?
Yeah, sure.
Exactly. You don't know. Did you get a gift from Santa this year?
Yes.
Yes, you did. Why?
Because
you were a good person.
Thank you.
Right? So you will continue to get gifts from Santa, as long as you're a good person.
Give me eyes. But
why do you give me an eye for Santa?
Give me an eye, but Santa's calling for help. He's saying, Alice, oh no, Alice. And Zelda runs in, and they get Alice out of the cell.
And they put her arms in these massive wooden boxes.
Yeah,
no,
well,
what
it's
the hell?
Same thing as, like...
What the hell is the wooden boxes?
It's the same thing that Dean Fogg had his fingers got broken.
Are they in
remember?
Arm coffins? What's going on?
They're oven mitts. She's going to make some cookies.
No, the oven mitts are different than the arm coffins.
They're attached to the arm coffins.
It's a very uncomfortable, unnecessary device.
Someone in the prop department was like, I know what we can do. We can get some oven mitts. We'll get
because
some
we
boxes.
Want to make it
we'll
clear.
Cut some holes in it. And then
we want to
we'll
make it
little,
clear that her arms
done.
Are dead. So let's
exactly.
put them in coffins.
But she's in her little hospital ward, which is
empty.
Empty. Yeah. There's no one else there. And there's, okay, so this is the thing. Is that the
There should
door,
have been another Penny
well,
in there.
The room because
Penny
that's
always
like
ended
the,
up in the hospital.
The break room is right next to the hospital ward, and the break room has entirely glass walls. So Alice jumps out of bed and catches a cockroach and puts it in her mouth and then gets back into bed. Someone would have seen that because there's literally glass walls. No, because Zelda goes into the break room and then comes back
out. She's very preoccupied with coffee.
She's reading. She was reading and she was like, wow, this part's so
well,
good.
Well, when you
I
read, you get
she's
very
like,
obsessed.
She's like, wow, this section of Ice Planet Barbarians is so steamy that I have to keep reading until it's finished.
Barbarian.
It's a book series.
From the TV show?
No, it's an actual book series.
Called Ice Planet Barbarians?
Yeah, there's like over 10 books.
Is it a love book series?
It's a bodice ripper.
Is it a sci-fi,
sci-fi space opera? I've heard they're actually really good.
Who's it written by?
I don't remember the name, but I am going to look for the books. Ice Planet Barbarian?
That's the series title?
Yes, but you know what's also good to read?
Magician?
No. Yes, but you know what else is good to read?
The Silver Arrow?
Yes. You know what else is good to read?
Narnia books?
Yes, but you know what else is good to read?
Peter Pan?
Yes, but you know what else is good to read? Sansuk by Detter Manfred. That's our ad for today. I've decided the very last chapter.
You're pretty late with this ad.
I know. Well, we just kept talking. So Sansuk by Detter Manfred.
I thought we were done with this gag, to be honest.
Is very important to me.
Yes.
And that's why I'm talking about it. And I'm allowed to because it's our podcast.
You're only 50% of this podcast.
Shush you. And it's a Lord of the Rings and Hobbit fic that you should read. It's 51 chapters, and it's super long, but it's super good.
If you're a Lord of the Rings fan...
It's literally Touchstone. You should read it
because it's...
It's super good.
It's as good as Tolkien.
Yes. I will make that claim. And it's longer than the Lord of the Rings.
If Tolkien were alive today, they would write Sansuk.
Exactly. But it finished today, and I had a lot of feelings about it, and I've been
Why do you have feelings for it?
Because I've been a fan of this fic for 8 years.
I've drawn pictures for it for
8 of those years. All 8 of those years, I've made music, I've made animation.
Yes,
and
it's very inspiring for you. So if you like Lord of the Rings, there you go. That's an ad. All right, we're done. This is not a Sansuk podcast.
But I wish.
Well, all right. Well, maybe you can do that on your own time.
Would you?
No.
Yes.
All right.
But...
I've given up reading. The magicians have cured me of this.
Uh-huh. They've cured you of reading?
Yes.
But Alice sneaks a cockroach into her mouth, and Zelda comes
up
to her.
What do you think a cockroach tastes like?
Chocolate.
They live in poop.
Yeah. So Zelda comes up to her, and she says, you know, I'm not going to let you kill yourself. You think maybe I singled you out as punishment, but no, I'm singling you out because I want to rehabilitate you. You could be a master magician, even better than like Mayakovsky or Dean Fogg. And, you know,
Why doesn't Alice believe in herself? That's the question.
Because her parents didn't believe
her. Everybody has told Alice that she is the best wizard.
Well, the thing is that Alice believes in herself too much. She thinks she's so good at magic that she thinks she should never just do a spell. Because remember, in season 1, she's like, I don't know what I'm capable of. That's like her biggest secret, is she's like afraid of how much magic and she
Is that like do. An artist who will never paint?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. But then Alice gets put back in her little cell, her wrists are all healed, and Santa's like, I thought you were strong. Fuck you, Santa Claus. Fuck you. Strength has nothing to do with suicide. Fuck you, dude. That is a terrible way of looking at it. It's not strength.
Fuck you writers
also. That's a terrible way of looking at it. Once again, a terrible mental health message to be like, strength is equivalent to your ability to not kill yourself. That's stupid.
I don't know. I think you have to be stronger to cut your own wrists. It's a pretty horrible thing.
Sorry guys, again,
we'll put a trigger warning
for this whole fucking episode. But it's just so fucking awful that, like, that's what he says when he's like, oh, be inspired, I'm so happy that I'm alive. And then he's like, I'm disappointed in you. Like, wouldn't he understand? Like, yes, you can be disappointed, but wouldn't it be better to be like, I was scared for you, I'm so glad you're still here, let's talk about this.
Yep.
Anyway, Santa Claus, you suck.
Writers, you suck.
But then Alice spits out her little cockroach, and she's like, I wasn't actually trying to kill myself. I was trying to get this little cockroach.
That's a pretty bad way to go.
Terrible
There's other
way
ways
to catch
of doing
a cockroach.
Again,
she could have just left out some food in her cell.
Following the fine tradition of bad plans in the magician.
But then we see Kimber D'Antoni. She comes... I just love saying her name. It's so
all
fun.
Right, all right.
She goes into Dean Fogg's office because everyone got their discipline today except for her. In fact, she hasn't been able to do any magic at all, and people have been calling her a squib, which apparently is deemed hate speech at Breakbills.
Well, it is pretty hateful.
Yeah.
It's hate speech... Is it hate speech at
at
Hogwarts
her.
as well.
Yes,
it should
it
be.
It is. But Kimber says, you know, the moment that I got here and knew that magic was real, I discovered like who I really was, and I don't want to lose that. But like, why? But like, why are you still believing in me when clearly I've got nothing to offer? Even though I like graduated from Harvard when I was 19, whatever. And Dean Foggs says, you know, you remind me of a young woman I once had as a student, and I rejected her from the school, and then she got really hurt in the outside world, and I couldn't protect her, and I don't want that to happen again. And it's just, it's really sad, because, like, Dean Fogg's like, yes, I finally get to be, he says later on, he says, you know, thank you for letting me finally be your teacher. That's in the next episode. He's like, I don't want to repeat the same mistake. And so then we see Isaac, DJ, Hansel, and Janet
right.
all together. They've been gathered up by Sam. No one can find Kim. Brian's missing. And Nigel, the bastard son of a British lord, also was put as missing. So they can't find those people. And they're all talking about, they're all kind of talking around their identities. And they're like, wow, this is so crazy. Like, magic is real and that we're, like, under the spell. And that's really crazy. Like, what does that mean for our identities? Like, we have memories, but they aren't actually our memories, you
I don't
know?
Wouldn't that worry you that you had this whole life and then
yeah,
you realize
it's like
not
literally
real?
You're being magically gaslit.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But
I'd be mad about
I noticed this, like, Isaac is worrying about, you know, not having his own identity or whatever, and then Hansel, like, takes his hand, and he's like, hey, man, you need to calm down. It's gonna be okay. And I'm like, damn, do I ship DJ Hansel and Isaac? Because it was just a very sweet moment. That's a joke. I don't actually. But it was very sweet. I love DJ Hansel. I love him so much. He's the best. I love Arjun Gupta. That man radiates good vibes, and he radiates even more good vibes when he's playing this role. But they talk around their situation, and they decide that they need to find the actual author of the graphic novel in order to, like, figure out what everything was. But as Isaac starts talking about how they don't have actual memories, you know, a portion of the ceiling falls down because the amulet can only protect so much. And they're like, hey, you know, that guy you got that amulet from, is he, like, dead or whatever? And Sam's like, no, he's in the hospital. I'm like, okay, well, why don't we go to the hospital and ask him about it? And then we see Marina. You asked. It's Marina 23. Marina from the 23rd timeline.
Right. So she's like, staying in this dimension.
She's staying in this dimension, and she says, you know, you actually took that from the guy I was loaning it to, so you took that from me. I want to get that back, but you guys are all under some weird spell, so I guess I'm going to check this out. And then we finally see the monster and Brian. That's right, we see Jennifer. Sweet, sweet Jennifer. That's not the monster's name.
Who's but, Jennifer?
But I like to call the monster Jennifer.
Why?
Because it's like Jennifer's body, you know? The movie.
That one with
Megan
her
Fox.
Fate?
Yeah,
Megan
it's
Fox?
A great movie.
Well, great is a very strong adjective to use for that
movie. Touchstone queer film. But we see Jennifer and Brian, Bri Guy, and they're getting ice cream, and the monster's like, I need to get a jacket or something, because I'm pretty sure, like, these meat bodies, like, die if you get cold or whatever. And poor Brian is just so haggard. He's, like, covered in... They're both, like, covered in blood.
No, that's...
And,
they're not covered in
blood
until...
Well, they're like... They have, like, little specks
no,
of blood
No, that's
them.
After
No, the whole time... No, the whole time they do
no,
have little...
No, the blood comes
no,
from the
no,
ice cream man.
No, because the ice cream man's like, here's your ice cream with Jimmy's, and the monster's like, I asked for sprinkles. And Brian's like, no, Jimmy's are sprinkles. And the monster kills the ice cream man. He's like, oh, Jimmy's are sprinkles. And he eats his little ice cream.
What flavor ice cream did he get?
I think he got pistachio.
So that means that you have to be a horrible monster
to
pistachio.
Eat pistachio. But then he's like...
I like pistachio.
But then the monster
is like... Does
that
mean like, that I'm a...
You're a monster, nice. Yes. But the monster is like, you know, hey, person that we are not calling Brian, sweet... beloved Bri Guy, Brian, not Brian, we're gonna go to Greece to catch this god and get him. And Brian's like, can we play a different game that doesn't involve killing people? And the monster's like, what do you mean, sad little man, we are calling Brian? I just love all the monster's nicknames for Bri Guy in that moment. But Brian can't really come up with an answer. So he's like, here, eat my ice cream. And then Brian, like, sadly eats the ice cream.
It's
and it's so funny.
It. Nobody wants bloodstained ice cream. It's so funny because,
like, Jason Ralph made such a sad face when he does it.
He's sad because he only gets one scene in this
episode. He only gets one scene in this episode, but he still got that paycheck.
And he got ice cream.
He did get ice cream. So then we see Marina's apartment, her loft. They all come through a mirror portal. And Marina's like, okay, kind of get in a little circle. I'm going to check out you guys and see what's up. She takes the amulet from Sam. And she's like, okay, so there's huge magic on you, big magic, and we know that if we poke it, it'll poke back. So I'm just going to figure out what this is, because strictly speaking, this isn't really legal anymore, which is crazy to me. So she does her little magic, and she, like, walks in a little circle while she's trying to unveil their faces. And we can just kind of, like, sort of see their faces, but the magic is so strong that it's really just kind of...
cool effect.
It was really cool. Like, their faces are, like, changing back and forth, and there's, like, bits of
light,
they're
masked.
Blurry might. Yeah. And she walks in her little circle, and she says, like, Revela, Revela, to look through. And then there's a huge burst of magic, and everyone's kind of like
knocked
unconscious. Well, all the people who are charmed are knocked unconscious, and Marina's like, whoa there, and it's like reverberated and stuff, and the amulet started heating up when she's doing the magic as well, because the magic is so strong. And then we see Janet once again with Ember in Whitespire, and Ember's like, why haven't you fixed the thing yet, High King? Is this like a game we need to play where I need to tell you how hot you are before you do anything? And Janet's like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I'm not, like, Fillory isn't real. Why do you keep coming to me in my dreams and whatever? And she's like, I'm not in Fillory. And Ember's like, oh, I can fix that. And so Ember sends Janet to Fillory, and Janet wakes up alone in Fillory, in the forest, and she goes, fuck!
Well, that should be nothing new for her.
Well, for Janet, yes. Then we see a spooky hand, kind of, something is watching.
It's Gollum.
It's Gollum. It's definitely Gollum. And that is the end of the episode, and we end with a suicide prevention hotline number. And they should have put it at the beginning.
Yep.
They should have put it at the beginning and the end, but
considering
they did
how
not.
Graphic it was for
yeah,
Alice
like
to have
really, really graphic.
Yeah.
Which
leading
sucks.
Out.
But yeah, that is the end of the very first episode.
All right. What would you rate it? What? Wait.
Well,
what's
we
our
have
new?
To come up with a new rating
what
system.
Is our rating system this time? Mirrors.
God bits.
No, mirrors.
I like.
How many
God
mirrors? Because
no,
we've already got them going through the mirror.
Well, we have God.
They're using the mirrors to look at them.
No, because the whole thing of the whole season is like they have to get little God bits.
What is God bits? That sounds like a breakfast cereal.
Well, really, what they look like are like giant beans.
So beans. That's our.
No, not beans.
How many beans?
How many
Why
God?
Not?
How many God bits?
No, I don't want to say God bits for the entire season.
For
that's
the entire
just gross.
Season. Okay.
How
well,
about beans?
Beans.
Yeah.
How many? Out of 5 or out of 10?
No, let's stick with our 5 beans.
5. Well, I will give this a 3 out of 5 beans.
3 out of 5 beans.
God beans. Because I like this episode. I like how fun and established this is. I don't like the Sam's a cop. But
yeah,
I do enjoy DJ.
I
do enjoy
figures.
DJ Hounsel. I love him so much. Arjun Gupta, you're great. I love Bri Guy. I love the monster. I adore them so much. I love Janet.
Okay. Would you give this how many
great.
Beans? I wasn't paying.
Three out of 5 God beans.
All right.
Yeah.
I will give it, I don't know, I'll also give it 3 because I felt like it was kind of inconsistent. There were a couple of interesting things. I like the fact that it was focused on them trying to find out who they really were. I liked, I don't know. It was kind of uneven because the whole Ember thing was kind of
That's weird.
Seemed unnecessary.
It is.
The Alice suicide was fucked up.
Yeah, it's
the,
fucked up and bad.
The, I don't know. It just, I think it would have been an interesting episode if it were all
just
cast with
all
the new actors just for one episode
mm-hmm.
where they're like, something is not right. Every time we go to find out something about ourselves, weird things happen. Let's find somebody that can help us. They end up all getting together. I think it would have been more interesting if they had carried the thread not Julia.
Kimber?
Kim, no, the other, the cop.
Oh, Sam.
Sam slash, why am
Katie.
Katie, thank you. Why am I forgetting Katie's name?
Uh-huh.
I think it would have been interesting if the perspective were like from Katie, who was then kind of like assembling everybody. Procedural, yeah, like a, yeah, like make it a procedural detective thing. And then, you know, maybe at the halfway point, that's actually when they get, the well, that's when they find stuff. Marina. And yeah, like then add in all the magician stuff, but like have the first half of the episode be like a procedural cop thing where she's like, you breaking know, the mystery. The well, constantly. No, but like the, no, the mystery is her is like, there's something that's not right. It's like, wait a second, why are, you know, why did I run into this person who's treating me this other way and is calling me by this other name? What's going on? Right. Like if it were that, that would be interesting. But the other thing is this, we don't have a really good sense of time of how long it's been. Yeah. How long they've been in this other identity, which I think is kind of a
disservice.
Yeah. Well, also the fact that because the monster is already with Brian, so we know that unfortunately they become.
Maybe what if it's like Sam is investigating the disappearance of Nigel and Brian because she finds a connection.
Sure,
and then
yeah.
what happens is because of that connection, she starts realizing strange things about herself.
Right.
Which leads her to
yeah.
other stuff. And maybe it's like, you know. Janet worked for a fashion magazine, or whatever. But maybe she's more like an independent journalist, and she did a story about
sure,
it for
yeah.
other money, and so that's how they connect. And then it was like, you know, Isaac was the Uber driver that last saw Brian, and DJ Hansel
was at the club that
Nigel was at when he was partying,
exactly.
and so on. And so then it like it all starts to come together, and everyone's like, "Why are these people are connected?" And then they realize they're even more connected than they initially thought.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a much better story.
Once again, magicians, writers, we're right here.
All right. Well, the show is long dead,
dead.
All that's left keeping it alive
is
us
dancing with its corpse, like we're Weekend at Bernie's.
Exactly. You are what's his name? Who's the?
It's me.
Who's the pretty boy?
It's me, Peter Strait.
No, not Peter Strait.
And you're Andy Hoover.
No, you don't even have a context for the real. You've never even seen the movie.
I have never seen the
original. We should at least
watch. No, I don't want to.
Yes,
I only want the reroll version in my brain because it's so good.
Your brain.
Shout out to the sun king. Shout out to the sun god.
Stop it. Your brain is Your brain is a very interesting place, obviously.
Uh-huh. But
all right.
So what was your rating?
I gave it a 3.
A 3? So 2 threes out of
Maybe a 2.5.
God beans.
I don't know. Maybe a 2.5.
Out of 5 God beans.
Yes, out of 5 God beans.
Yes. But, that's the end of the first episode.
All right, we're done. Yay.
No, we're not done. No. There's way more. In fact, you know what we have?
What do we have?
An email.
One email?
One whole email from long ago. Sorry, guys. We pre-recorded all of the book episodes, so we couldn't read it, when the time actually came, but we have an email all the way back for season 3, episode 13, and it says, please don't read my last name, I want to pretend I'm not a giant nerd. So, okay, this is from Chelsea, and it says, hello, Fillory and family. I'm listening to your show now. I should probably wait until the episode is over, but I don't want to. So thrilled to hear Brenda again. She's quieter than the host, but is constantly supplying excellent thoughts. I'm a big fan. I think Evelyn needs a Gavin jar. That's the traveler's name, right? Every time you forget it, maybe put a quarter in the Gavin jar. We're almost past him now, I think, but still, I vote for the jar. Scott should listen to If I Didn't Have You by Tim Minchin. All of the alternative dimension talk made me think of it. Also, he should know there's a picture on the internet of a teddy bear made of placenta, so more disgusting than chicken. Quick question for Evelyn. Do you ever resent your mother for getting you all into this? The heartbreak, the frustration, the magician'sness? No, I do not resent my mother, because I love my mother. Quick question for Brenda. Do you ever regret sharing this show with your child and husband and dealing with the madness? Do you feel like your life would have been simpler? She literally said yes.
A what? When did she say that?
She said yes to me when I read this to her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought she was going to say, because she likes watching it with us.
She does like watching it with us. She was sadly not here with us.
Yeah,
but she did phone call accidentally when we were about to start watching. So technically in spirit,
she was watching the first episode.
It says, this has been a very disjointed email, but at least it was well timed and I'm finishing it just as the episode ends. Thanks for another great season. Well, thank you so much, Chelsea.
Yeah, thank you, Chelsea.
If you want to send us an email, you can send it to us at fillaryandfather@gmail.com. We got a new season. We'd love to get some new emails. And you can also, I'll plug this first. You can also find us at Fillory Father on Twitter and at Fillory and Father on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a new layout, which is pretty fun and sexy.
No. Still waiting for that t-shirt.
Still waiting for the t-shirt? You'll get the t-shirt. I'll make the t-shirt. Nice. I'll make the t-shirt.
So where else? Well, non-fillery related.
Well, you're going to ask me.
What?
What's happening?
Oh, that's right. World of the Magicians. Yeah. What, you kind of like jetted right into the emails.
I know. Well, I wanted to do the email.
Okay. Well, what's going on in the world of the magicians?
Well, the Queer as Fan Work Magicians event has ended. So now you can go and read like all of the different.
How many got turned in?
Things. I don't know. There's a whole bunch though. Also, the Philanthropy Bitches fan book and all of the other charitable things that are going to go on for the Covenant House organization are going to be happening very soon this month in July. There's also the Magician's Big Bang, which is coming up, which is pretty fun and sexy. I'm illustrating one of the fics, and it's a very fun fic. I'm looking forward to seeing everyone's reactions. There is also today, this very day, or actually it was last night, because we're actually recording this in the morning of the day. This is supposed to go up.
Okay,
all
right, just
The Great Filter, which is the new one act, produced by Looks Like a Great Time, which is the company that Trevor Einhorn and Jason Ralph, kind of own. And it's their astronaut play, and they just opened in New York. It's an actual live production, and
good
they're
for
going
them.
To also
welcome back to Broadway.
They're
guys.
Also they're off Broadway. They're also still selling, I think, digital tickets. I have a digital ticket for the 29th of July, and I'm very excited to watch it when it finally get that little ticket and that little link. Because it's
then
a very exciting time. I'm going to watch it and I'll be like, wow, this is good. I love theater. I miss theater.
Are you going to give it Godbean ratings?
Yeah, I'll give it Godbean ratings. but those are all the things that are, currently happening.
If somebody wants to reach out to you online, how can they do so?
You can find me at wow_then on Twitter and at fishydwows on Instagram and on Patreon, also under the name Evelyn Rogers. And you can find my website, evelynleerogers.com. Anywhere there's a website, basically. Right. Safari, Google Chrome, Firefox,
right.
Any other Bing, anything you want. where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Mighty Bedbug. You can find me on Instagram, Mighty Bedbug. You can find me on LinkedIn if you want to look at my resume. I don't know. That's it.
Okay.
You can find me in Game Masters Movie, still available on Amazon Prime and other streaming services that you'll see both Evelyn and myself in.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Hey.
Hey, what?
First episode of the new season.
We did it.
We did it!
Hooray, we're
done. No, we're not done.
Oh, okay. We have 12 more episodes, so stick with us as we listen and, as we watch.
As we watch and you listen.
On
Fillory and Father. Yay!
We're over.
Bye.